Now, News Talk Radio CJAD 800 presents the CEO Series, insights from top business leaders. Your host is Carl Moore.
Welcome to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. The CEO Series takes you inside our capstone MBA class at McGill. Each week, we sit down with some of Canada's, indeed the world's top leaders, to discuss strategy, leadership, and today's pressing business issues. And some of the world's top leaders have spent time with us, such as Justin Trudeau, Muhammad Yunus, Nobel Peace Prize winner, and Joanne Liu, former international president of Doctors Without Borders. The show gives you a thin, well, perhaps not so thin slice of the kind of thoughtful leaders our McGill MBAs are exposed to. Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Chandran Thomas, CEO of Northern Trust Asset Management in Chicago. Thank you, Chandran, for joining us today.
Where are you from? And tell us a bit about your family and how that might have influenced your start in life.
So I was actually born and raised on the south side of Chicago. Now, you know, over the course of life, I've lived and worked some other places, but I moved back to Chicago in 97 and have been here since. Now, it's a debate in my house, given especially pre-pandemic, how much time I spend on planes in other countries where I actually live. But I do have a residence in a suburb just outside of the city of Chicago. So again, born and raised on the south side of the city, you know, my narrative is set probably by a couple of different things. You know, sort of growing up and coming to age in the 70s, you know, there are some things that define that experience. I said, you know, it probably started out, you know, middle income family. Went through a tougher period of time because if you can think about during those times, industries like the steel industry were very important. My father, after serving in the Air Force, worked for one of the largest steel companies. And I can remember distinctly when I was young, when they literally, he went to work and he showed up and literally the steel mill was closed down. So I can remember those years and the subsequent period of time in terms of, you know, what that meant for our family financially and otherwise, and sort of the things that you wrestle and struggle through. I would say that the balancing thing, when you think about sort of forget the, you know, sort of socioeconomic sort of situation, I have really great parents. And I would say the things that they instilled in me when I were young were a couple of things, a deep abiding faith. They're people very strong of faith. A sense of, you know, possibilities. I would say when I grew up, my parents were always encouraging. So there was nothing that I ever felt like I couldn't do, notwithstanding, you know, sort of temporal circumstances. And then I would say, you know, there was a certain kind of work ethic that played itself out in different ways. For example, both of my parents later on in life went back to school to get their college degrees. And so if you're in high school as a high school student and you see both of your parents, you know, sort of working and going to school, you figure if they can balance all that and do it, you can focus on your books. And so those were some of the things I would say that were really instrumental in kind of some of setting some of the formative things early on in life, Carl.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. And today I'm speaking with Chandran Thomas, CEO of Northern Trust Asset Management in Chicago.
Where did you study for your degrees?
So I did my undergraduate degree at Florida A&M University, which is in Tallahassee, Florida. And then I did my MBA at the University of Chicago here in Chicago.
Looking back on it now, some years later, what are a couple things that you really appreciated from your MBA?
I think within 2 years of leaving school, 50% of the graduates changed jobs. And so my only point, not bad or good, is that like this set idea that people often have in their minds in terms of this perfect path that they're going to follow, it's just the importance of having a desire for learning. So I had an undergraduate business degree. I had went and worked for a Wall Street firm, went back to school, and I kind of knew I would, at least in my own mind, pursue that business. But I took a variety of courses. So while I did have concentrations in finance and accounting, I was one class short of a concentration in strategy. I'll tell you, there's a funny story of how that comes back to play in my career later on, not knowing how that would play itself out. I took courses in new ventures and entrepreneurship, never knowing that I would start a business someday, actually did that. And I would say some of the most impactful and useful classes I had were classes like organizational behavior or managerial decision making. And so the complement of the learning that you can get if you, you know, sort of commit yourself to learning for the sake of actually developing professionally and personally, I think is really important. And so not so much just to concentrate on, I would say, for lack of better terms, the strict career motivation.
What are you learning this year? Like, are you still learning? Is that something where your wife would say, hey, he's always learning, he's always thinking? Is that you?
Yeah, that is me for sure. So I'm the quintessential, on average, you know, I read about 3 books per month. And when I'm not like with my fingers, you know, turning pages in a physical book, because there's like no room in our house left for books. That's one of the things my wife, if you talked to her, probably would complain about all the space that we have on shelves. You know, I try and get more electronic ones now. You know, if I'm in the car, you know, I'm listening to, you know, books on tape or information. So I've always been really intellectually curious. I think that you never stop learning. My discipline is investment management. And, you know, having done that for many years, working in the capital markets, you know, I look to be excellent at that. But like one of the things I'm doing now just for my personal edification, I at one point spent some time working in wealth management, but I'm combing through and studying a lot on financial planning, what you would think of in a curriculum for financial planners. Now, I have no expectation at this point in my life of being a financial planner. It's intellectually curious to me.
It sounds like you have a high energy level. You write books, you're married, you have a couple boys, you work big jobs, you're reading all the time. You just have a high energy level. Is that what people say?
For sure. Have a high energy level. But I think probably it's worth saying, what do I think the driver of that is, right? Because there's one thing to say that you're energetic. And then there's a different thing to say, like, what that is. And so I feel like I have a strong sense of purpose. So things that I'm truly passionate about, in ways very intentionally, you know, I want to, for lack of better terms, make the time count. So there is an intensity and an energy that comes with that, but it's a base that motivates that.
We're speaking with Chandran Thomas, CEO of Northern Trust Asset Management.
How did you find your purpose, and how does that play out today?
So I think this is a great question, and I'll tell you my perspective on it. And there are many perspectives, many of which I've read about. But I think that, one, you're on a continual life journey. So one thing I would say in answering to your question is, I don't necessarily view purpose as this one fixed thing per se. But I do think there are 3 things that intersect. And the way I have these things where I easily teach myself to remember things, and it's an intersection of 3 P's. And so I think for all of us, if we look inside, there are things that we're naturally passionate about. So you could start with that. But passion is not enough. I think the second thing is proficiency. You know, if you try things out, I think all of us find, whether it's through innate skills, what we choose to develop, there's certain things we're really exceptional at. So I think that it's not just, am I passionate about something, but am I really good at it? And when I mean really good, I mean, you know, better than most. So for instance, I'm an ENTJ. If you're, you know, into Myers-Briggs, I'm an 8 on the Enneagram. I know I'm an abstract thinker and communicator. Certain things come to me more naturally. I can excel at certain things. The last thing is preparedness. It's just, you just got to do the work. And so at some point in time, so what I found is, when I find the intersection of things I'm passionate about, I'm proficient in, and I'm willing to do the work, therein usually is like a milestone to purpose. And so for me, writing is a perfect example of that. I knew very early on in life that I loved writing. And I never necessarily early on thought about pursuing it as a career, but later on decided that I was going to write a book. And so 4 books later, what you find is writing is something, yes, you can be passionate about. You only become proficient in it by doing it and have that high level preparedness by putting in the work. It's the same thing that I feel about in my role at work. You know, I find that I'm very effective at leading diverse teams and developing people. But you have to figure out for yourself if that's what you want to do. We have some people, they're what we call more individual contributors. They're exceptional in terms of thought leadership. They just as soon be locked in the closet than locked in a room with 3 or 4 people. So, I mean, you just have to figure those things out.
We're speaking with Chandran Thomas, CEO of Northern Trust Asset Management in Chicago. Coming up, we're getting to know Chandran a bit better and why he doesn't believe in having a personal brand. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking today with Chandran Thomas, CEO of Northern Trust Asset Management in Chicago.
Reading your book on joy at work, tell us about what's the basic, or what are some of the key messages of that book? I love it. I'm very much enjoying it. Tell us about what is that, the key messages of that book in your mind?
If you talk to people, and we spend most of our waking hours pursuing our vocation, whatever that may be. But I've always been astounded, A, at how many people would think of a term as joy at work being strange bedfellows. Mm. I've also found it to be that I engage with extraordinarily talented people. And Carl, when you really press them and you get them to admit their truth, they're incredibly despondent or disengaged about their work. And this is a high majority of people. It's not a minority. And so I figured, you know, there was something there. And so I think there are some fundamental truths that state the basic premise of the book. That number one, I actually believe work in its truest form is actually intended to be joyful, right? I also believe that in order to really sort of discover that joy in work, it takes self-introspective. It is intentional. And so you have to espouse what I would call a true work ethic, right? And that means that more than just the external things that we get from work, the pay, the promotion, and sort of the respect, it comes down to work has the ability to create or build character in us. So that's, you know, sort of second sort of fundamental premise. And then the last thing is this concept that I talk about, what I call work-life synergy. Because, you know, for many years, I used to read, and maybe it was just me, you know, people would talk about work-life balance. And to me at work, it always felt like my life was out of balance. But I think initially I was looking for something that was, in a sense, almost a false god. I think what you have to find is work that is truly synergistic with your life, right? Because you don't get to be a different person at work and away from work. And in the world that we live in, you don't get this, you know, sort of perfect dichotomy, like I leave work at 5 o'clock and I cut it off. And so if you're doing work that's inconsistent with kind of who you are as a person and what you feel, in a sense, your motivation and your purpose is, it's hard to find that synergy. So I talk about the importance of finding work-life synergy.
We're speaking with Chandran Thomas, CEO of Northern Trust Asset Management. I'm also joined by Joy Bennett, who works at McGill in development, and she's a former MBA student of mine. She had a question, too, for Chandran.
Sort of leading off from the idea of leading diverse teams, what does it mean to do that? How do you bring out people's authentic selves and make it possible for everybody to be real, but still be a cohesive unit?
So first of all, if you want people to bring their authentic selves to work, because I have this visual in my mind, like most people show up at the office and then they open the trunk of their proverbial car and like pack the best selves of themselves in it and then go into the workplace, right? So the first thing is, as a leader, right, particularly if you have positional leadership, you have a significant ability to influence the culture, right? And so the first thing it starts with is you yourself have to be willing to be transparent and authentic. So there's no such thing as having a truly transparent and authentic team dynamic if the leader is not transparent and authentic. Because what you're doing every day is, forget what you're saying, you're signaling to the group that authenticity or transparency, right, is not really accepted here. And that means, in part, you have to be vulnerable. So that's number one. Number two, I think that you have to actually shape the culture. So really good cultures, whether it's in a small group like a team or a broader organization, they happen on purpose, not by accident, right? And so one of the best ways and one of the biggest tools you have as a leader to shape the culture is your voice, right? And so the nature of the dialogue that we're having. So for instance, I could tell you, you literally could make a call to one of the 900 plus partners that we have in asset management across the globe. And one of the exercises we went through was to identify and establish shared values. And I think with about 95% hit rate, if not better, they would tell you our five shared values are passion, competence, intellectual curiosity, diversity, and humility. They tell you humility is the one that drives them all. They would tell you how they matter in meaningful ways, how they become the lexicon in which we share. they would tell you this also. While those are our shared values, values being deeply held beliefs, we all have individual values. So there's some things that we value differently. But what happens when you create that kind of narrative, what you're saying to people is it's okay to have your personal beliefs. It's okay for them to be reflected. And we've created not only an atmosphere, but a culture where there can be an exchange for us to talk about those kinds of things. When you do that, now you've laid the foundation of being able to develop and to lead and to encourage diversity and to have diverse teams.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and today I'm speaking with Chandran Thomas, CEO of Northern Trust Asset Management in Chicago.
For the MBAs, you're the leader, so you set the direction, but from their viewpoint, they're going to join a team rather than lead it at the beginning. How do you find that right now?
So the first thing I would say is I think the truest form of leadership is not positional leadership, it's actually influence. And if you believe that on some level, then what I would suggest is that means that you can lead from whatever position you're in. It doesn't mean you're in charge making all the decisions. And I think that's what people confuse. Sometimes people confuse who makes certain decisions with the quality of leadership, right? So the first thing I would say is just know that you can lead from whatever position you're in and that you have to find your authentic voice and your leadership. Now, part of the way you do that when you show up, like when you first enter the team, you have to think about what is the currency you have. And it's really only two basic forms of currency. You've got performance currency and you've got relationship currency. You can refer to those as currency or capital, right? And when you show up to a team initially, you don't have much of either, really none, right? And so the first thing you have to do is what is the job description you have? So you actually have to perform, right? But the thing that I would say, Carl, that a lot of really smart, particularly MBAs, miss is the slope on performance capital goes like this. At some point in time, once people figure out you're quote unquote a high performer or you're competent in your role, it's diminishing marginal returns. That is my expectation for you. There is no diminishing marginal return on relationship. You can always expand the value of your relationship capital. And so the importance of doing that, and by that, I don't mean just sort of generically networking or handshaking. I mean developing true, meaningful relationships with a broad array of people of different backgrounds that, in a sense, give you meaningful capital. And that capital translates into influence in your organization.
How would you define your personal brand, Chandran?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm not, and you, hopefully you'll appreciate the spirit when I say this. I understand when people talk about personal brand, what they mean. I'm not philosophically a big buyer in the concept, but I'll explain what I mean. I'm not a big social media person. This is interesting. Like, you know, I, you know, the only social media thing that I would say I would consistently use is LinkedIn. Theoretically, I would tell you, when I deal with my publishers and things like that, like we had to argue for me to agree to finally agree for the purposes of the book project to have an Instagram account. But what you'll never find on my account is like posting I'm here on sort of vacation doing this or so forth and saying. So I think that in a sense, brands are real things. So I don't think people don't have them, but I think it should be authentic. So what I try to express is, when you're searching for your authentic self, when you're giving what you have to give to the world, you're first of all, know your values. And when you live those out, they in a real and a tangible but authentic way establish quote unquote a brand. But I think to try to contrive one potentially becomes a facade.
We're speaking with Chandran Thomas, CEO of Northern Trust Asset Management in Chicago. Up next, we'll be talking about his widely circulated open letter about racial prejudice and discrimination. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
This is the CEO Series with Carl Moore on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking today with Chandran Thomas, CEO of Northern Trust Asset Management in Chicago.
I got aware of you because of an article about you in the Financial Times. And they had heard about a letter, and I read the letter again this evening in LinkedIn.
Right.
Why did you write that letter? And what's your key messages of that letter that you wrote that reached the world?
So it's interesting because at the beginning of the year, the letter that you're referring to that was featured in the Financial Times was an open letter that I wrote. And it was one of three I've written this year. It was the second one. It was called Breaking the Silence. I just want to mention, interestingly enough, the very first open letter that I wrote was about the COVID-19 crisis. And it was a perspective that I had that, you know, we were really missing what was really going on. There was so much talk in terms of what was going on from an economic standpoint, but my starting point is, first and foremost, this pandemic is a health and humanitarian crisis. And if you don't understand that and you don't focus on that as a leader, you're really missing it, right? And so what I argued is there was a compassionate form of leadership that we needed to see on more fuller display in all areas, whether it be the corporate sector, whether it be government or what have you. And so that letter spoke about how the beginning or the start of the cure for COVID was compassion, right? But the letter that you speak of in Breaking the Silence, the thesis was simply this. When it comes to issues of race and the history in Western countries, and it's particularly acute in the U.S., but it is not an acute issue in Canada, is a very difficult one. And when you come in mixed or polite company, I think the thing that we've all been told explicitly or implicitly are there those proverbial third rails, you know, religion, you know, sex, race, right? But the problem is racial discrimination, racism, racist ideas are very real thing. And by the way, I say this, and this is factually true, we should all have a problem with it, because if you understand the inception of it, by definition, right, it was biased and hierarchical. The whole social construct meant that certain quote unquote races were on the top and some were on the bottom. We needed to break the silence on all sides. And I felt like, very specifically as an African American, if I was willing to step out and speak on this issue, and I shared very transparently, an issue that happened to me in terms of racial profiling. By the way, it was one of many issues over the course of my life, but it created and opened up a narrative. And I think people could relate to it in different ways because they could more personalize the interaction and the story.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. And today I'm speaking with Chandran Thomas, CEO of Northern Trust Asset Management in Chicago. Chandran, what can white people do about racism?
So I think there are a couple of things that can be done. Let me start with, because I'll answer your specific question as a white person, but let me say what we can all do. People, it's interesting, and this is very true in Western cultures. It's amazing how most people live in wholly monolithic communities. We confuse ourselves in the fact that we come into the workplace and we intermingle. But if you go and look where people live, the communities by oftentimes race, socioeconomic standing, et cetera, are extraordinarily monolithic. But so the first thing that we can do is we can actually develop real, genuine relationships with people who don't look like us. That may seem like a small thing. People may claim that they do, but pressed to the wall, you would find that that is the exception and it is not the norm. And so how can they be any meaningful address of these issues? Because I think where the best address comes in is when you can have the real conversations with people that you know, you have a relationship with and that you trust. So that's number one. I think that when you talk about, you know, sort of from the white community and I'm going to share my perspective, you know, people will disagree with parts of it, but I'll just tell you my honest perspective. So one, you really do have to lean in, right? Because I think there are people don't, I think that in general, people of all backgrounds don't realize how much we have all been influenced by racist ideas. Now I want to be clear on what I said so people don't recoil. Having been told or even consciously or unconsciously bought into a racist idea doesn't mean you're a racist, but it means that racist ideas are prevalent throughout society. And so how we are conditioned to think about people of different racial backgrounds, I don't know if we ever really challenge ourselves to say, where did that thought or that idea or that construct comes from? And so leaning in to say, I'm going to take some time not to, you know, sort of get my opinion through the newspaper, but I'm actually going to do some real research. I'm actually going to understand. And the understanding comes two ways. It's a function of understanding the history, because a lot of people want to say, well, that's the history, it's in past. Our history we carry with us. So you can't ignore history because it informs how we interact every day to day. So understanding that is something that people can do and not just ignore it. And the second thing is find the safe space to engage with others, including people in your community. Because again, if we call develop a close relationship and we can share on that issue, where it really has impact is if you're then willing to go back, because we all belong to many communities, and have those conversations with the communities that you're a part of.
We're speaking with Chandran Thomas, CEO of Northern Trust Asset Management.
Now, you're an impressive, well-dressed, confident Black man that everybody's got to accept this guy is somebody, is how the world must look at you. But you still have people saying really stupid things to you sometimes?
Yeah, and that's why I think this dialogue is so important. Because, you know, I tell people, you know, racist ideas, racial discrimination to a Black person, it is not remarkable. I mean, it is literally not remarkable. And so every year of my life, I can recount to you different events. Like, you know, Carl, I can tell you, these are the things that you just live with. You don't even mention them. I was not too long ago traveling with my wife. We happened to be with a couple of other couples. They happened to all be people of color. We're standing, we're dressed for a night going out, impeccably standing outside of a restaurant. We're waiting to retrieve our cars. No disrespect, a gentleman couldn't have looked much different than you, walks out of the restaurant with his wife. No exaggeration. He doesn't hand, he tosses his keys at me. Because he believes in that setting that I am there to retrieve his car. I'm going to tell you another example. I was invited to a conference as the keynote speaker, and they wanted me to come and be part of the keynote panel, ironically enough, to speak it on diversity in our industry. So to your point, I didn't have on my suit yet. I arrive at the hotel, but again, I'm not going to look slovenly on any occasion. This resort, they literally, the people at the receiving area of the resort were turning me away. They were like, "What are you doing here?" So I had to prove to them not only that I was a guest at their resort, but I was speaking at an event there. And the only way that they actually backed off and let me check in, because they had the agendas for the conference there, and I showed them my name on the agenda. Gets better. I had to walk by the pool to get to where the rooms are. And on my way to the room, no less than two of the guests stopped me so that they could give me their orders for food. What I'm saying, Carl, this is the norm. It is not the exception. And so that it's hard for people to appreciate, just because you have a certain role or you change socioeconomic status, the context or the way in which people see you does not necessarily change.
We're speaking with Chandran Thomas, CEO of Northern Trust Asset Management in Chicago. Up next, we'll be talking about how he navigates discriminatory experiences. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking today with Chandran Thomas, CEO of Northern Trust Asset Management in Chicago. Those are very difficult experiences, discrimination that you've described. How do you manage in those moments?
So, you know, here's the thing, and I'm not saying it's not necessarily sometimes hard in the moment, but I fundamentally believe in the concept of grace, right? And so one of the things I've learned over time not to do is to not to react. Because to Carl's point about the keys, I mean, the immediate temptation is to throw the keys back. But I actually sort of calmly then looked at the gentleman, and I like the power of asking. And so I said, "I'm curious, why did you toss me your keys?" And the first response, you could almost see indignation in his face, because it did not register to him, even at that point of me asking the initial question, that I was not there to retrieve his car. What was interesting is his wife then quickly began to notice, and I saw her tugging at his shirt. And he said, oh, you can just give those back to me. And so I used that as an opportunity to say, but I said, I still have a relevant question. I'm just curious on why you tossed me your keys. Mm-hmm. Part of the sometimes is giving the opportunity or the space to allow people to reflect, to not respond in kind, I think creates an opportunity. And so the only thing I wanted to do is not show my indignance in response. I did want him to think about the question because I said maybe approached in a similar situation, he might pause. Because I'll say this, and this is a really important thing. Even if I was there working in a dignified way, because it's nothing wrong with that job, I don't think he should have tossed the keys at anyone. So my point is not that he tossed the keys to me and he didn't realize that I wasn't there. That's part of it. But my point is, what kind of dignity or respect do we treat anyone with? And that's an important question.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. And today I'm speaking with Chandran Thomas, CEO of Northern Trust Asset Management in Chicago. Is there such a thing as reverse discrimination? And what do diversity quotas do to a workplace? In your mind, does equity and equality always work in tandem?
Equity and equality are two different things. So let me be very clear and transparent in my view. I am not an advocate of generic quotas, but I want to be abundantly clear. I'm absolutely an advocate of targets. So my job is simple. In every single thing of importance that I do, I sit on the management group of a public global corporation. I'm held accountable and I'm held to task. And for every important thing, there is a measurement for me. There is a target. So it is wholly inconsistent to me for somebody to say to me, we have an objective. We'd like to increase our level of diverse representation. However, unlike every other thing that we do that we say is important, we actually won't have a target for that. We won't measure it. We won't say what success looks like. We won't measure milestones to approaching that. Doesn't make any sense to me. It's inconsistent. So I think it's wholly consistent, at least from my own view, to have targets, objectives, or goals. I think creating processes also that create equal access is appropriate. So let me give you an example. We have an incredibly diverse leadership team, and I like to say to people, we got there on purpose, not on accident, in our asset management business. We did not get there by making a generic quota. We did not force people into roles. One of the things that we did do is we went back and looked at our practices, and we saw by virtue of our historical practices, we were not seeing diversity. We weren't seeing gender diversity. We weren't seeing ethnic diversity. And so our practices were not producing it. Why weren't they? Because most of the ways that we recruited historically at organizations like this, and this is very true of financial services firms, is most people who come in the door are a function of relationships that they have with the senior people that are part of the firm. So if we use that informal process, we had no hope of producing more opportunity. But if we said we would have a more balanced or formal process, we would open that up. We would be transparent about it. We would make the access to the opportunities more equal. And then we would see what the outcomes produce. So I think there are ways that you can do it that don't create quote unquote reverse discrimination.
How does a crisis like the COVID-19 pandemic influence leadership in your mind?
You know, one of the things that I think about, you know, we've had a focus on things like more sort of compassion or empathy given how people are being impacted by COVID-19. Or unfortunately, there's been a spotlight put on some of the issues that we see with respect to racial injustice. But the question, and I've raised this, is this a moment or is it a movement? As we began to move back to what we may consider a sense of normalcy, the pandemic in some way has caused us to pause, to move out of our normal routines, to give us, in some respects, whether we wanted it or not, more time for reflection. So to your question, how do we do that? I go back to that point I made about the power of dialogue. We can't believe that things that have taken literally decades and centuries to present certain outcomes get changed overnight. And so if we back away from having the dialogue, so what I like to say to people is we've only begun to talk and we've barely begun to listen. So we need to continue the dialogue.
We're speaking with Chandran Thomas, CEO of Northern Trust Asset Management. Chandran, is it a burden sometimes to be a spokesperson for inclusion in corporate America?
I'll just be very frank with you. It's just, it's as a person of color, in the industry that I'm in and the role that I have, it's a bit of a burden that you bear. Now, here's the good thing. There are instances in which the expertise that I have in certain areas, like I built and launched our ETF business, and I was the only person of color to actually lead an ETF business, right? And so there was an accord and a respect for, you know, in a sense, leadership in that regard or my domains of expertise. You have those things. But to your point, it can be really exhausting. And whether it's in my organization, whether it's a board that I'm on, as you can imagine, every time there is a conversation about diversity, right, I'm expected to be part of that conversation. Anytime there is a dialogue about, quote unquote, how Black people or ethnic minorities more broadly are experiencing things, I'm expected to do that. And here's one of the challenges, and I would encourage people that are in the majority to think about this. To have a real dialogue, you need transparency on both sides. And so I'll give you an example of something that I experienced. Now, it was written to me. I'd like to see these things done publicly. But they told me how much, a woman wrote me and told me how much, and she was a corporate executive. She was moved, and I didn't know her personally, by what I'd done in the marketplace. She is not a direct client of mine, but she's a client of the corporation. And she went on to recount to me how when she grew up, she went to a parochial school, and it was integrated by this one Black girl. She had been friends with her outside of school, but wouldn't show that they were friends when she was in school. And she said she saw her encounter all kinds of discrimination, both at the hands of the students and at the nuns who were teachers. She said she was encouraged by virtue of reading my open letters and the engagement to reach out to that individual and apologize and encourage. Now, here's the thing. That was a powerful thing. It was meaningful for her to share that with me. Here's where we'll get to a different point. We need people in the majority to share that, because one of my burdens is I always am expected, right, to put myself out there, to have that vulnerability, to take all the darts that come along with it. I have to express beliefs. And as soon as you express a belief, you're going to get people that oppose that. And so many people call to one of your earlier points, and I say this in a respectful way, one of the privileges is often if you're in the room, you'd never have to state an opinion on that issue. You would never have to worry about somebody challenging your belief. You'll never have to worry about what that means on a subsequent decision that they will make about you with respect to your career or your board service or any of those things. You can actually remain undeclared.
This is the CEO Series. Chandran, thank you for joining us today. The show is produced by Marie LaBrosse. I would also like to thank our technical producer, Marco Campagna. Thank you for tuning into the CEO Series. À la prochaine.
For more info and full interviews, go to cjad.com now.